Wednesday, March 10th, 2021. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is off to a good start. Hope you, your family, your friends, everyone in your life is staying healthy right now. We are happy to have you here with us today. Well, kids, here we are. It has now been a year. It is now the 1 year anniversary of our 2 week shutdown to flatten the curve of the global pandemic that we have been dealing with. Man, that has been a long 2 weeks, hasn't it? I mean, if I didn't know better, it almost seems more like 52 weeks than 2 weeks. But maybe that's just me. Here is a question that I want you to think about right now, though. Over the past year, how many times have you talked yourself into actually having COVID? Because I've had it no less than, I don't know, 200-300 times myself. You wake up in the morning, you kind of stretch, you're kind of feeling things, you go, yeah, I feel pretty good today. Hold up. Wait a second, my neck hurts. Is a sore neck a sign of COVID? Let me Google this. I think I heard something about it on CNN. Is it possible a sore shoulder? I don't know, like my elbow hurts a little bit. Is that a sign of COVID? I'm going to Google the symptoms and see if maybe I screwed around and caught the COVID. It is easy to talk yourself into having anything. And here's the problem. It doesn't help that the list of symptoms is pretty much anything, everything. Sore throat, cough, headache, fever, stomach ache. Have you stubbed your toe lately? Do you, I don't know, have a hangnail? Is one of your eyes twitching a little bit? Are you fatigued? Do you sweat after you work out? Do you have premenstrual cramps? Do you have postmenstrual cramps? Do you listen to country music? Do you hate country music? Have you ever thought about starting a podcast? If so, you probably have COVID. I'm telling you right now, over this past year, it has been real easy to talk yourself into feeling something, isn't it? I mean, you have to sit there and like concentrate. Do I have a headache? I don't think I have a headache, but you know what? If I tip my head back and like to the left, you know what? My head hurts. My head definitely hurts. I might have a headache. Uh-oh. I done messed around and got COVID. Well, here's the thing. The good news is that 1 year later, we seem to be developing at least some sort of herd immunity. That's good. 1 year later, the vaccine is already out. And by the way, I have to talk briefly about the vaccine. Because I know there are a number of people that can't wait to get in line and go get that vaccine. And I get that. And then there are other people that swear no matter what happens, they'll never get that vaccine, at least here in America. I don't know what they're saying where it is that you live. But here in America, there's a number of people that say, I'm not getting the vaccine. Hey, we don't know what's in that vaccine. They could be giving us anything in that thing. Who knows what they're giving us? Yeah, but isn't it like a little bit ironic that a country that is known for like wolfing down Big Macs at like a record rate is complaining about how we don't know what's in something we're going to take? Like, you can go buy a Big Mac right now. Go buy it. Put it in the trunk of your car. Leave it in there for a full year, 365 days. In 1 year, you pop the trunk. You will open that Big Mac and it will look exactly the same when you take it out of the box as it looks right now today. And as a country, we eat like 14 Big Macs per week. And then we wash it down with a Diet Coke. Keep in mind, a Diet Coke will take the rust off an old penny, but we're worried about what weird substance the vaccine might have in it. I don't know. Seems a little bit odd to me is what I'm saying. I wouldn't worry so much about the vaccine. I'd worry a little bit more about some other things in my life, but maybe that's just me. Here's another question for you, Daily Dose listener. What have we learned over the past year? Have we learned to take better care of ourselves? Maybe get in better shape. Maybe eat a little bit healthier. Get outside, get some sunlight, get some sleep. I mean, I hope so. I really do. I hope so. But I kind of doubt it. And I'll tell you why. Because I'll tell you one thing that I have learned over this past year. I have learned that as a people, we can't do math anymore. We're not able to. 2 + 2 is no longer 4. And honestly, we really don't want to be bothered with trying to figure out that crazy calculation. I'm not sure why that is, but it is. Let me explain what I mean. We are told we need to wear masks. We are told that 2 masks is better than 1. So 3 masks must be better than 2. 17 masks must be better than 3. We are told we must social distance. You must have 6 feet between people when we're at the line at the grocery store. Or we must space the tables out at a restaurant. Or like in California, we must just shut the restaurants down completely. It's too dangerous. But you can get in an enclosed tube in a tight space with no social distancing whatsoever, and you can take your mask completely off if you want to. I know what you're thinking. Come on, that doesn't happen. What are you talking about? Have you been on an airline flight lately? Take your mask off while you eat your peanuts and drink your soda while sitting like 3 inches from the person next to you. That's fine. Also, a ton of schools are still closed across this country. Hey, we can't have kids spreading this crazy stuff all over and killing grandma, right? Granted, there's no documented cases of kids spreading it all over and killing grandma. In fact, kids under 18 aren't even eligible to get the vaccine, at least here in the States. But again, we don't want to do math. We don't want to think about that. Sports were shut down all around the world for a while. They have now come back slowly. And I know personally, my daughter plays high school basketball. And here in Colorado, if you're playing high school basketball, masks are mandatory for players, for referees, and for any spectators who actually, originally you weren't allowed to have spectators, but now they're starting to let each player have 1 to 2 spectators each come to the games in these giant gymnasiums that'll hold, 2,000-3,000 people. You can have like 10 spectators at the game now. Now keep in mind, basketball, it's not a collision sport, but it is a contact sport. So you have kids posting up and boxing out and making contact. They've got like their nose in their opponent's armpit as they try to get leverage and try to box them out, right? They've got to wear their mask. Everyone in the whole gym has to wear their mask. But then when they come out of the game, they have to sit 6 feet apart from each other on the bench. Forget the fact you just had your face in some kid you don't know's chest. Now you've got to sit 6 feet apart. Hey, we can't be too careful, right? Got to be careful. I understand. It's an indoor sport. It's a contact sport. We have to be cautious. We don't know how this is all going to go. Meanwhile, I saw a high school wrestling event last week taking place in one of the other gyms at the school I was at. Do you realize that masks aren't required for wrestlers? And I mean, I get it. They just get torn off. But again, I'm not sure how it makes any sense. I'm not sure how a lot of the little silly things we're doing right now make any sense. I'm not sure there is one documented case of someone getting COVID from a pen, but if you go to the doctor's office, they're dunking that pen in all the antibacterial stuff they possibly can to the point the pen doesn't even work anymore. Because maybe, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like we're real good at doing math. I mean, I saw the Big Ten and the Pac-12 destroy their own football seasons, cost themselves a ton of money this year on games that were being played outdoors and in games that ended up showing no cases of breakouts whatsoever, only to see both the Big Ten and the Pac-12 both play full indoor basketball seasons now. So of all the things that we have seen and all the things that we have lost over the past year, I know we've lost some people. My heart goes out to those people that lost friends or relatives or whatever they might be. But one of the things that we've definitely lost over this past year, we've lost a lot of math because we don't want to be bothered with something so trivial as math. And sometimes when you think 2 + 2 = 4, you realize that 6 feet of distance doesn't always mean 6 feet of distance. It's more just something to make us feel a little bit better because a lot of it just seems really, really silly. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us how you have witnessed the death of math over the past year. Maybe tell us how you've witnessed the death of common sense over the past year. We'd love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are @dailydosports. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you've got a sports question. Maybe you've got a question about a certain team. I do hear from a number of you out there just throwing out a question. What did you think about this trade? What do you think about this free agent signing? Hey, if you've got a question, feel free to reach out. We would love to hear from you. Also, we know that over the past year, we've done a lot of online shopping. We're still doing online shopping. So make sure you stop by tpublic.com and pick up some Daily Dose gear. Got a couple of new designs over at tpublic.com. You can pick a Daily Dose football or basketball design. You can pick them in any color that you want if you're picking clothing, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, a number of items over at tpublic.com. Make sure you stop by over there and get the Daily Dose gear that you need in your life. Today on the show, March Madness is coming quickly. We're going to be talking a little bit about that. But do you realize that NFL free agency begins next week already? The NFL, they just managed to stay in the news pretty much year-round. And here they are again with something else that is going to have our attention. We are going to be talking about some of the top free agents that are going to be on the market. And we will have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you today as well. So we've got a lot to get into today. Probably need to stop messing around. Let's jump into some sports news from the past week. We are going to be talking some March Madness a little bit later in the show, but let's start off with that right now because a few teams have already punched their tickets to the big dance. The Liberty Flames will go from the Atlantic Sun for the third straight year, but this time they knew that they were already in the NCAA basketball tournament and they hadn't actually even played yet. You might not realize this, but the Flames were set to face North Alabama in the Atlantic Sun Championship. But because North Alabama is still a team that's in the process of transitioning to Division I athletics, they're actually not eligible to even participate in the tournament. So Liberty got an automatic bid, and it really didn't matter what happened on the floor. The Winthrop Eagles beat Campbell easily. They will represent the Big South. Loyola Chicago is going to be dancing thanks to winning the Missouri Valley. And I'm telling you right now, we talked about it a little bit in the last few weeks, Loyola Chicago is going to be a problem for some teams. They have the top-ranked defense in the country. They run a really efficient offense. If you draw Loyola Chicago, I mean, you should beat them, but you might not beat them. They're going to be a problem in this tournament. Morehead State upset Belmont. They will get the bid from the Ohio Valley Conference. UNC Greensboro, they get in by winning the Southern Conference. And you know, UNC Greensboro, they have been to the tournament before. They've never won a game, but they have been there before. Sometimes that matters a little bit. And by the way, UNC Greensboro, they've got a kid by the name of Isaiah Miller. He is explosive. He is going to be really, really fun to watch. Again, might be a team that's a little under your radar, but you might want to keep an eye on UNC Greensboro. Appalachian State is going to be dancing. Even though they only went 17-11, hey, they got hot at the right time. And we know when it comes to March Madness, getting hot at the right time is the only thing that matters. If you're playing well in March, going into April, you've at least got a chance to make some noise. What's going to be interesting now is that with all of these small conferences getting their automatic bids, every single time that we see an upset, it could mean one less at-large bid for a team that's out there on the bubble. Teams like Duke, Indiana, Syracuse, they are in serious danger of not getting in right now because we have seen a few upsets already, and there's probably going to be more as we get through these conference tournaments. Moving over to the NFL, quarterback Ben Roethlisberger is officially back with the Pittsburgh Steelers for the 2021 NFL season. That is what the team announced last week. The Steelers did not disclose the terms, but a source says that Roethlisberger reduced his pay to $14 million from $19 million in the final year of his contract. He spread the cash payment through to 2022, and the move will actually lower the team's salary cap hit by more than $15 million. So, if you're a Steelers fan, this is what? This is good news? This is bad news? I mean, are you happy about this as a Steelers fan? I mean, I know one hotel worker in Lake Tahoe probably isn't real happy. I know another college student down in Georgia. She's probably less than thrilled.
You're disgusting.
But Steelers fan, how are you specifically feeling about this? I mean, Ben did throw for 3,800 yards last year. He threw 33 touchdowns last year. He also managed to get that Steelers offense to only score 26 points per game last year. He also managed to get blown out by the Cleveland Browns in the playoffs last year. Here's the question. At what point do you want to rip that Band-Aid off? Because I know Steeler fans are probably saying, okay, it's time. We can go get someone else. Let's go get the next guy. And I mean, I totally understand that. But I also totally understand if you want to wait. If you want to keep signing Ben to these lower deals and just keep him playing. I mean, I'm a Broncos fan. Look how this whole thing has gone for us. Understand, though, it is coming. You're going to have to do something with Ben Roethlisberger eventually. Maybe you get one last year out of him this year, and maybe he does something good. I don't know how that's going to go. At the end of the year last year, Ben kind of looked like he'd had enough. It's going to be interesting to see if he can find that same passion. We do have some contracts that have gotten done in the NFL. The Dallas Cowboys finally ponied up some money for their quarterback, Dak Prescott. They give him a 4-year deal worth $160 million with $126 million of that guaranteed money. Well done, Dallas Cowboys. Keep this in mind. You could have probably had Dak last year for $30 million per year, but you drug your feet, so now it shall be $40 million per year. Oh, and by the way, don't forget, he's coming off of that big ankle injury. So honestly, we don't know if he's going to be the same. I mean, we're all just assuming that Dak is going to be okay, right? But we haven't seen him. And mobility is a big part of what Dak Prescott does. I know that Jerry Jones must have been a good businessman, like, in his day. Yeah, his day seems to be past. Because the Cowboys could have saved themselves a lot of money if they'd have got this deal done last year instead. We have seen a couple teams put franchise tags on players. The Denver Broncos slapped a franchise tag on safety Justin Simmons again. They are hoping to get a new long-term deal done with him. The Chicago Bears franchise tagged wide receiver Allen Robinson. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers used their franchise tag on wide receiver Chris Godwin. The Carolina Panthers tagged offensive tackler Taylor Moten. The New York Giants franchise tagged defensive lineman Leonard Williams, and Washington put their franchise tag on offensive guard Brandon Scherff with that same goal in mind. All these teams that are doing that, they're hoping to get a long-term deal done. We just don't know if that's actually going to happen. Speaking of the Washington football team, you know how there's like a fairy tale or a storybook or like a sports movie, and there's just this great finish to the sports movie. It just makes you feel really, really good. Maybe like a player has gone through, I don't know, a life-altering injury. He literally almost dies. But then he makes a dramatic comeback to walk again, to eventually run again, and to eventually win the big game. Cue the dramatic music. We have tears running down our faces. Well, imagine if in that big sports blockbuster movie that after winning the big game, the team then cuts that star player that we fell in love with. I mean, imagine if Rudy had been called for offsides. Imagine if T.C. Williams had let racial tensions blow up their high school team and they lost the big game. Or imagine if, like, white men could actually jump. It would be terrible, right? No one would like it, right? Well, that actually happened this past week with the Washington football team, or WFT, if you will, although a lot of times that franchise feels a lot more like WTF. Anyways, quarterback Alex Smith, who won the 2020 NFL Comeback Player of the Year Award in helping Washington win the NFC title, has now actually been released by the franchise. Aww. Smith had 2 years left on his contract he signed after Washington traded for him back in 2018, and he made it clear to Washington he wanted to continue playing. But I mean, his time in Washington is always going to be remembered by that broken right leg that he suffered back in November of 2018, and then his comeback in a situation where Smith underwent 17 different surgeries to fight an infection, and he actually had to make the decision whether or not to have his leg amputated. And somehow he came back. He walked again. He ran again. And then on October 11, 2020, Smith went in and played in a real live NFL game. He led Washington to the postseason. But now the team wants to upgrade their quarterback position. So Smith is gone. They have cut him. He is no more. So much for our great heroic comeback story. Meanwhile, hopefully Alex Smith finds somewhere to catch on. And I think he could be a backup and kind of a mentor. And I'm just kind of lobbing this out there. Couldn't you totally see Urban Meyer taking him to Jacksonville to kind of help rookie Trevor Lawrence once he drafts him? I mean, Urban did coach Smith at Utah. I have a feeling that might be a nice landing spot for Alex Smith. Moving over to the NBA. The NBA All-Star Game took place on Sunday. And it was largely a snooze fest. Team LeBron beat Team Durant, I think. I don't know. It was a game that pretty much resembled, you know how like you go to the rec center and you play a game with your friends. And for the first few games, it's pretty competitive. People are really getting after it. People are really trying. And then, you know, everybody's kind of out of shape. So pretty soon, you're just goofing off. You're just jacking up threes. You're just kind of screwing around. And usually there's someone that finally says, hey, everybody, let's just shut it down and try again next week. Like the first couple games were fun, but now it's just become boring and stupid. We're trying all these dumb shots that have no chance of going in. That was what the NBA All-Star Game looked like the entire time. From the tip-off to the finish, that is what the NBA All-Star Game looked like. Now, Steph Curry absolutely shot the lights out in the three-point contest. If you didn't see that, that was worth watching. Some kid named Anthony Simmons won the dunk contest. No idea who that was. But there was a bigger story in the NBA over the weekend. Because over the weekend, the Detroit Pistons, who have been so terrible, that now they're just deciding, let's just torch our roster and start building for the future because who cares? They cut six-time All-Star forward Blake Griffin, and Blake announced over the weekend that he will be joining the Brooklyn Nets. And as soon as that news hit, all the talking hairdos and all social media came out and everyone was saying the same thing. Well, the Nets are definitely the best team in the league right now. You've got Kevin Durant, you've got Kyrie Irving, you've got James Harden, and you have Blake Griffin. Hey, they're better than the Lakers now. And, you know, I totally get that sentiment. If it were 2010, but it's not. It's 2021. And when you watch Blake Griffin now, you realize he might know what he wants to do in his mind, but his body won't allow him to play like he used to. He is no longer the explosive, freakish athlete that he used to be. He is no longer a 20 and 10 guy where you just know, hey, roll him out there. He gets 20 and 10 every single night. Now, Blake Griffin is like a 12 and 4 guy that maybe comes off the bench and can't really help the Brooklyn Nets in the most important aspect that the Nets really, really desperately need. They need help defensively. Well, Blake isn't doing that. He's not like this monster rebounder or shot blocker or defensive presence. And so as a result, I don't know if this really changes the Nets all that much from what we already saw them being. They're very good. They're going to be pretty tough in the East. Beyond that, I don't know that they're going to do much of anything because I still don't think they can stack up against the Lakers. And I'm still not truly convinced that that team is going to plow through the East as easily as they probably should. No question, they have all the talent, but they also have a collection of knuckleheads. And I'm not sure how much I trust those knuckleheads in crunch time. Finally, speaking of sports movies, we talked about that just a few minutes ago. We have now seen a few of the screenshots from the new version of Space Jam 2 starring Los Angeles Lakers superstar LeBron James that is due to be released in July this year. And just looking at the photos, I am noticing some real movie magic taking place from the folks in Hollywood. For one, LeBron James has a full head of hair. I mean, he has a big, full head of hair, a nice, straight hairline. There are no patches. There are no missing things. There are no tufts that are just kind of falling off of his hair like a dandelion in the spring. He has a nice, full, dark, black set of hair. He's got some good-looking hair in Space Jam 2. Now, I don't know where they got it. I mean, did they go back in time to when he was like in middle school? Did he make his workers in China knit him a new rug? I don't know. I just know that in the pictures, LeBron James has got himself a new do, and it is sharp. Like, it looks pretty good. But, you know, it's not just LeBron and his whatever Rogained head that looks different to me in Space Jam 2. Do you remember Space Jam, the first one? The original one? Maybe the only one? I don't know. We'll see how this one goes. Lola Bunny looks remarkably different from the first movie, too. I don't know. I couldn't put my finger up, but she's missing something. Or she's missing a few things. Possibly, in fact, I think she's missing two things. Specifically, the Movio Studio says they desexualized the cartoon rabbit by making her look more like a teenage boy. Let me see if I have this straight. Again, sometimes I get confused. So, Hollywood, the people that tell us, hey, it's okay for females to embrace their sexuality, is now telling us a cartoon rabbit is not allowed to be sexy? I don't know exactly what the thinking is there.
Don't ever call me doll.
Do you see what I meant earlier about the death of math? I'm telling you, it's just everywhere right now. Just worldwide, there is no common sense 2 plus 2 equals 4. We don't have that. I don't understand it. It's massively confusing to me. I don't know that I'm looking forward to Space Jam 2 at all. I will say this. I did watch Coming to America, whatever that movie was called. I did watch that over the weekend. It's on Prime. If you saw Coming to America back in the day, Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall, I did watch the second one. I'm a big fan of the first one. You may or may not have heard some clips of that movie on this show from time to time.
His mama named Clee. I'm going to call him Clee.
But I did watch the second one this past weekend. It was okay. It wasn't painful. I just don't know if it was like all that funny. It certainly wasn't as funny as the first one, but I wasn't expecting that much. But Space Jam 2, not sure I'm going to be able to sit through that one. So far, I'm seeing some very, very strange things going on in that world. Okay, coming back. The NFL season just ended. But that doesn't mean there's nothing going on right now. Because the NFL is about to hit one of their most exciting times of the year already. Get ready, because we are about to start a big, giant game of musical chairs in that football league. We're going to talk about a few guys that are definitely going to have a chair to sit in. We're going to get to them when we get back. So we've talked about it before here on The Dose. I know that the NFL does some dumb things. And I mean some really, really dumb things. When I look at some of their replay stuff, when I look at some of the things that they've done, some of the rulings they've made, they've done some really, really dumb things. No question about that. But I have to give the NFL credit for one thing specifically. They managed to stay in the news like all year. Like every month, it seems like there's something else happening in the NFL that you want to make sure that you tune in for. Other leagues end and it's like, okay, see ya preseason next year. So long. That's the end of it. But the NFL, it seems like they have something going on all the time. The Super Bowl ended. Okay, we have nothing. See you next preseason. Well, not so fast. Because then we reach the time that player contracts expire. So we kind of keep an eye on whose contracts expire, who's going to be gone, who's going to leave. Then teams can now sign franchise players. So, okay, who's going to get the franchise tag slapped on them? And now NFL free agency officially begins alongside the arrival of the actual new year. It begins next week, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday, March 17th. And then, I mean, the draft is going to be here in April. And before we know it, we're going to have mini camps. We're going to have rookie camps. We're going to have training camp going. And we're going to be back into another season of the National Football League, because that's just how they roll. But before we get to all that, today we are going to be looking at some of the top free agents that are about to be available. Now, maybe some of these guys were members of your favorite team. Or maybe your favorite team could be on the market for the talent that some of these guys have. So who is about to be on the market? Let's take a look at 10 of the more talented guys that are going to be out there, going to be possibly available for your favorite team to sign or for your favorite team to lose. And a couple of these spots probably would have gone to those guys that got franchise tagged. I mean, I think I had Dak Prescott as our number one free agent. Obviously, he's off the board now. A guy like Brandon Scherff, he's off the board now. But let's start off with a guy that isn't getting that much publicity as far as free agents go. But Green Bay Packers running back Aaron Jones, there's no question. He's one of the league's best running backs. Now, I understand, like all running backs, he has a very short window to how long he's going to be good. And he's heavily dependent on the people around him. Because if he doesn't have an offensive line, if he doesn't have a quarterback, if he doesn't have some help, it's going to be tough. And I also understand that Aaron Jones has been in a great situation up in Green Bay. He's running behind a pretty good offensive line. And when he does go out for a pass, he catches that pass from a guy named Aaron Rodgers. Hey, that could make anybody look good. But this guy can play. There's no question about that. He averages 2.95 yards per attempt after contact. That ranks him number two in all of the NFL. He's a tough runner. We don't really think of him that way, but Aaron Jones is one of those guys that is up there with the Derrick Henrys and the Christian McCaffreys and the Alvin Kamaras. And remember, each of those guys has already gotten a big fat contract. Aaron Jones is going to get one next. He can beat you in a few different ways. He can run between the tackles. He can hit the corner. He can catch passes out of the backfield. And because of the system he was playing in Green Bay, where they used a few different guys in the backfield, he's not all used up. He's still got some pretty good miles left on him. Green Bay, I would assume, is still going to try to keep Aaron Jones. But I mean, the Miami Dolphins, the Chicago Bears, they would love to have a shot at him. And I'll tell you another team that would love to get Aaron Jones. And he would really help that offense. The Pittsburgh Steelers, because they didn't have a running game last year, and it really, really cost them. I think Aaron Jones is one of the most intriguing free agents that's going to be on the market. Up next is a guy that plays wide receiver, and I'm not quite sure what to make of him, but make no mistake, he's a very, very talented guy. He's going to hit free agency, and he's only 24 years old because he entered the NFL when he was so, so young. The problem for Juju Smith-Schuster, we don't know exactly who he is or what he is. Obviously, he's extremely talented. But what role does he play? Where does he play? His best season was in 2018 when he had 111 catches and 7 touchdowns. But remember this. He did that when he was playing in the slot and Antonio Brown was the primary wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So is he a number one guy or would he be better off in the slot? Now, Juju has been hurt the last two seasons. And now that Pittsburgh has had Deontay Johnson, Smith-Schuster has kind of moved back to the slot for most of the snaps that he's getting in Pittsburgh. Hey, there's a ton to like about this guy. He's really smart. He's really fast. He understands coverages. He can go against man. He can find soft spots in zones. I think he's better equipped to be in the slot despite the good size that he has. But can he be your number one wideout? That I'm not so sure about. Now, it looks like Juju is done in Pittsburgh. It sounds like they are probably going to let him leave. But if he does, I mean, I'm thinking the New England Patriots have to just be praying to get him. Because we know Bill Belichick knows how to use slot receivers. I don't know if he's ever had a slot receiver as talented as Juju Smith-Schuster. The Miami Dolphins will have to be interested in him. The Washington football team will be offering him a new deal. Juju is going to be interesting to watch. We're just going to have to see where he kind of fits in on whatever team he lands on. Ideally, he gets on a team that already has a number one wideout. Up next at 3, we have another wide receiver. And I know we've got a few wide receivers. We're going to have actually one more. But the next one up is a guy that has blazing fast speed, because Will Fuller is one of the fastest wide receivers in the NFL. No question about that. And that always raises their level of, well, he could be really, really good. Now, even when the Houston Texans still had DeAndre Hopkins as their number one guy, Will Fuller was making a huge difference for the Houston Texans being out there because he can take the top off of the back of a defense. He is so fast. Defenses have to respect the fact that Fuller can get deep on you every single time. The biggest problem for Will Fuller, he's just missed a lot of time with injuries. And he missed time back in college with injuries. He's missed time now in the NFL with injuries. Is he a guy that can ever stay healthy? Because that speed makes him so tempting for teams that are looking at him. Now, I know when he was in college, Will Fuller had a bad reputation for one thing. He had all the speed. He had all the moves. He was really, really dangerous if he caught the football. But since he's gotten to the NFL, he has gotten better with catching the ball. I wouldn't say it's all behind him. He's better, though. He has improved in catching the ball. He's only had 19 drops in his career, and 14 of those were in two seasons alone. So he has improved with his hands. But now who is going to go get Will Fuller and get themselves a very fast guy? I'm not sure if Houston can keep him. We already know the Green Bay Packers have said they have some interest in Fuller. Now, if he goes to Green Bay, can you imagine that speed playing with Aaron Rodgers? Aaron Rodgers can throw that ball pretty far. I would be very interested to see that. And you'd have to think that the Baltimore Ravens would also have interest in a speed guy like Will Fuller. Last wide receiver on this list today, he's going to come in at number 4, but he's a guy that might not be the household name of these other two guys, but he's putting up some pretty good numbers, and he's doing it for a pretty bad team because Kenny Golladay has been in the league now for 4 seasons. He has put up over 1,000 yards in 2 of those seasons, even though, like I said, you might not really know the guy. He is a big, strong kid, but he's played for the Detroit Lions. And while he has been very good when he has been on the field, he has also battled a few injuries. But I mean, Golladay is a guy that can beat you deep. And Golladay is a guy, he's a big target. On the outside, if you throw up a pass where it's between him and the other guy, it's usually Golladay that's coming down with it. He's a good route runner. It sounds like he works pretty hard. And again, he was doing all this in Detroit. Now, don't get me wrong. Detroit has a decent quarterback in Matt Stafford, but I mean, what else do they have? And what other receiver do they have that is taking attention away from him? Not that much. So most opponents knew, hey, the ball's going to him, and they still couldn't stop it. I mean, think of some of the wide receivers that have come out of the NFC North lately. Galladay's stats are right there with the best of them. So I would think that the Lions may try to franchise Kenny Golladay. But if not, those same teams, Giants, Jets, Patriots, Dolphins, Ravens, they're going to be bidding for this guy because he is a big, strong guy. I have heard them call him Babytron because he is that kind of guy like Megatron was with Calvin Johnson. Kenny Golladay, don't sleep on how talented that guy really is. He is going to be a big-time target if he is out there and available. Now, our next guy at number 5 didn't play a snap 2 years ago. But Trent Williams finally got out of Washington. He went to San Francisco this past year, and he proved he is still one of the league's best offensive tackles. And the thing about him, he can play in any scheme. I mean, he can push defenders in the run game. He absolutely loves going downfield and finding defenders at the second level, and he will punish defenders at the second level. He's also shown that he's a really, really good pass blocker. He can play in different schemes. He has now played in different cities. So it looks like Trent Williams is a guy that can probably just plug in at left tackle wherever he goes, and he's going to be really, really good because it didn't matter going from Washington to San Francisco. He still looked like a big-time offensive tackle. Now, when he went and signed with the San Francisco 49ers, they agreed they will not franchise him this year. So Williams is going to hit the open market, and he's going to have a ton of bidders on him. The Cleveland Browns will want him. The New York Jets will want him. My Denver Broncos, well, I don't know if they'll want him, but they better want him. The Minnesota Vikings will be very, very interested in getting Trent Williams because he will be a huge upgrade on their offensive line. Might cost a little bit, but he is definitely going to make your offensive line better. He can play anywhere. And, I mean, it doesn't seem like his age is bothering that much. He might be that guy that can play well into his 30s and still be effective. Now, maybe your team doesn't need a wide receiver. Maybe your favorite team needs an upgrade to their pass rush. Well, one of the more efficient pass rushers in the NFL over the past few years he's probably going to hit the open market. Because Shaquille Barrett has put up solid production, whether he's been playing kind of part-time, like he did in Denver, or whether he's been playing more full-time, like he did with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Shaq Barrett is versatile. He's a good run defender. He's a really good pass rusher. In all 5 years of his career, he has shown he can do both. He is a guy that will set an edge in the run game and make sure to keep your ball carrier inside where the rest of his help is. And he's also a guy that comes out, he uses his hands, he uses his quickness, he's got a lot of moves, and he will put pressure on opposing quarterbacks. Barrett had 20 sacks in 2019 in his first year with the Buccaneers. Now, keep in mind, you can look at that crazy high number and think, well, that was just 1 year. That was just an inflated number. But remember this, Shaq Barrett has mostly played in a 3-4 defense. He's been an outside linebacker. So that means a lot of times he's dropping into coverage. A lot of times he's not even being asked to pressure the passer. He's dropping back and he's covering people. I mean, he's playing standing up. He's not putting a hand down and coming after the quarterback every play. So when he does rush the passer, he's really efficient at doing it. He gets there often because he's not always going after the quarterback. He will upgrade your team's pass rush. Now, here's the question. The Buccaneers have some major decisions to make with all their free agents. Maybe they would use a franchise tag on Shaq Barrett, but maybe they use it on Godwin. Maybe they'll use it on someone else. If Shaq Barrett becomes a free agent, he is going to have a number of bidders. Tennessee could use him right now. Dallas, Minnesota, the Jacksonville Jaguars, they're all going to be interested in Shaquille Barrett. He is going to be a very, very rich man eventually. We get to our number 7 best free agent here. And I'm going to go with someone who I think his team is really going to try to keep him. Because the Minnesota Vikings are going to do everything they possibly can to make sure that safety Anthony Harris stays in Minnesota. Because Harris has been one of the best safeties in football for the past few years. He just keeps getting better and better. I mean, he was an all-pro 2 years ago. He has been a perfect fit at free safety for what Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer wants to do with his defense. Mike Zimmer likes to give a lot of split safety looks because a lot of times Mike Zimmer has to deal with multiple wide receivers. And that's what the split safety look is for. Harris has been really, really good at playing that system and making plays on the football. He's a really, really good coverage safety. He's shown the ability to read routes. He's shown the ability to also be able to look in the backfield and read quarterbacks. He just seems to make plays and have a nose for the ball. I think Anthony Harris is going to be due a big deal. Hey, Minnesota has a huge decision to make at safety because he's kind of been the anchor of that defense. It's going to be a big loss if he gets away from Minnesota. But if he does, I can tell you right now, the Cleveland Browns want him already. So do the Dallas Cowboys. We know Dallas needs a number of upgrades on their defense. Anthony Harris is a guy to keep an eye on. Moving on to number 8, we have a guy who has been a starter on the offensive line from day one. Joe Tooney has yet to miss a game in his 5-year career, and he just keeps getting better while playing for the New England Patriots. In college, he was an offensive tackle, but he moved to left guard, and he's been really good in the run game. He's struggled a little bit in the pass game, but Tooney is still very, very capable of being a reliable pass blocker, especially at the guard position. It's not like you're putting him out on an island to tackle. If you have a speed guy mashed up on him, maybe he's going to have some problems, but at guard, he's going to be one of the best guards in the NFL. Now, looking back, if you look at what the New England Patriots did, they probably should have traded Tooney and got something for him. Now they're in the situation where they're going to have to try to re-sign him, and they're going to have a lot of bidders that are going to try to one-up them. Make no mistake, New England has some big money out there. They should have around $60 million. So they have money. But we also know the Arizona Cardinals are going to be interested. The Cincinnati Bengals will be interested. I would think the Denver Broncos might be interested if Tooney can find a situation where A, he's getting more money, or B, he has a better chance at a championship. Yeah, I would think he's going to be listening to that. We'll see where Tooney ends up. Moving on to number 9. You know, back when he first started, we all looked at tight end Hunter Henry and thought, this guy is going to be a star. In his first 2 seasons in the league, Hunter Henry caught 81 passes for 12 touchdowns. But since then, just seems like he can't stay healthy. He missed almost the entire year in 2018. When he's on the field, though, he's really, really productive. He's still a reasonably young guy. He can block. He can catch. He's strong enough to box out defenders and catch the ball on those underneath patterns. And he's smart enough when he's playing against zone. He can find those soft spots, find the hole in the zone, and settle in and become a good target for his quarterback. I would think the Los Angeles Chargers are going to offer Hunter Henry a good deal. But if they can't give him what he wants, I mean, wouldn't you think Hunter Henry would be a great fit for a young Trevor Lawrence down in Jacksonville? A guy just to rely on, hey, if I'm in trouble, I know I can go to Hunter Henry. Might be a good fit. What about Cincinnati, where he could be that same kind of person for a Joe Burrow and give him an outlet that he knows he can get to every time Hunter Henry is going to be wanted in the free agent market? Our final free agent on our top 10 list, and there's a number of guys we could put in here, but I'm going to go with a guy that plays a position that's a little bit tougher to find because Corey Linsley has been playing center up at Green Bay, and he's the best center that is going to be out there. If your team needs a center, you want Corey Linsley because he's the top guy that's going to be available. He's been great at pass protection. He's a strong run blocker, and he's played in a really good system up with Green Bay for a really good quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. You would think maybe if you brought in Linsley for like a young quarterback, he might be a guy that could kind of mentor your young quarterback and help him to try to figure out some of those things that Aaron Rodgers is so good at. You always want that coach on the field, and a guy like Corey Linsley might bring that from Aaron Rodgers. There are already a number of teams that are wanting Linsley if Green Bay can't make an offer that he wants. The Los Angeles Chargers have already made it clear that they're very interested. So are the New York Jets. There are going to be people interested in Corey Linsley because, like I said, there aren't a whole lot of prospects at center. He is the best of the bunch, and he's going to be getting paid big money. Now, those are the 10, to me, most interesting free agent prospects out there. But remember, there are a ton of guys that are going to be on the market. AJ Green, Melvin Ingram, Bud Dupree, Larry Fitzgerald could be out there. Richard Sherman could be out there. Sammy Watkins, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and so many more players that are going to be out there looking for new deals. We are going to see some teams make some major changes on their roster in the next week or so. It's always funny to me too, because we hit free agency. We know free agency begins next Wednesday at 4 p.m., right? But we're going to see players that are signed at like 4:05. Did they really get a million-dollar deal done in 3 or 4 minutes? No. They are making these deals right now as we speak. Hey, the NFL is about to be in the news again for the next few weeks. It's going to be very, very interesting to see which teams come out and actually make their teams better through free agency. Okay, coming back, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, Selection Sunday is this coming weekend. And this year, it actually sounds like the NCAA tournament is going to take place. That's phenomenal news, right? And while we have seen some of the top teams stumbling recently, the NCAA tournament this year is going to have one major favorite. Here's the question. Can they run the table? Can they win it all? We are going to talk about how difficult that is going to be when we get back. Now, as we do so many weeks, not every week, but like a lot of weeks, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, Selection Sunday for the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament is this Sunday. And recently, we have actually seen some of the top teams begin to stumble. And it's a little bit tough because you start playing teams in your own conference. They know you really well. They call out your plays before you do. And it just makes it tough to get wins late. I mean, Michigan got blown out by Illinois. They got beat by Michigan State. Baylor lost to Kansas. Illinois lost to Michigan State too. Iowa lost to Michigan. A lot of this is just teams beating each other up. West Virginia lost to Oklahoma State. Ohio State lost 4 games in a row recently. And even Alabama lost to Arkansas. There is a ton of shuffling going on right now in the top 10 recently. But there's one team that is not stumbling. And that is the number one Gonzaga Bulldogs. The Zags are cruising. They should make it through the West Coast tournament and into March Madness undefeated, and they should do it relatively easily. The Gonzaga Bulldogs are without a doubt going to be the team to beat this year in March Madness. But hey, we know. Crazy things happen in March Madness. And having a favorite, having a top seed stumble in the tournament? Yeah, it happens. In fact, it happens often. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is counting down the top 5 times we had a heavy favorite that slipped up and didn't get the championship that we all thought they would. Let's see what 5 teams could be on our list today. We start off at number 5. And we start off with a team that ended up getting a reputation for kind of coming up short in these big games. But remember, this team didn't just have 2 future NBA players on it. It had 2 future NBA Hall of Fame players on it. Because in 1983, the Houston Cougars were absolutely loaded. Phi Slamma Jamma had Akeem Olajuwon. They also had Clyde Drexler. They had Benny Anders. They had Michael Young. They had Rob Williams. They had Eric Davis. Phi Slamma Jamma was absolutely loaded. And the Cougars were making the second of their 3 straight Final Four appearances in 1983. Now, most experts agreed when Houston made it to the Final Four and they beat Louisville in that Final Four, well, that was basically the national championship game. I mean, the other national semifinal, that was between North Carolina State and Georgia. Who cares? That was like a battle for third, because we all know Louisville and Houston were really the 2 big dogs of the year. Yeah, except North Carolina State and head coach Jim Valvano, they had other ideas. The Wolfpack would steal a 54-52 win in the championship game as Lorenzo Charles grabbed Derek Wittenberg's shot and flushed it through the rim at the buzzer. And I will always believe that Houston head coach Guy Lewis kind of just got outcoached by Jimmy V. He kind of outcoached himself a little bit too, because Guy Lewis always preached that we go out and we play this high-flying style. We press. We have wide open attack. We just score and score and score. But then if a game ever got tight, he would kind of panic and he would kind of try to slow things down and take a ton of time off the clock. And as a result, Houston got beat by a North Carolina State team that probably shouldn't have beat him. Houston went down and came up short, and they come in today on our list at number 5. We move next to number 4. And we reach a team that has won the big game a few times. But for a few years there, they really had a streak going of always losing, and it seemed like they always lose to like a lesser opponent in the tournament. They had a great coach in Roy Williams. They had a ton of talented players. So what kept tripping up the Kansas Jayhawks? We go back to 1997 for our number 4 entry. And the Kansas Jayhawks were loaded. It looked like they were finally going to win it all for old Roy. Hey, they had all of the talent. Paul Pierce, Rafe LaFrance, Jared Haas, Scott Pollard, Jacques Vaughn. Show me a weakness on this Jayhawks team. It didn't have one. They rolled through the season and into the tournament. They had a 34-1 record. Next up for Kansas was another team that always seemed to fall short in the dance. But in 1997, the Arizona Wildcats were a little different, because Miles Simon and Mike Bibby and Jason Terry and Michael Dickerson, they just kind of seemed like a team that would not be denied. They would find a way to beat you. The Arizona Wildcats scraped past Kansas 85-82 in the Final Four to send the Jayhawks home. Even though the Jayhawks might have been the most talented team in 1997, Kansas would have to wait another 30 years to win a title. And today, the 97 Kansas Jayhawks come in on our list at number 4. We move on to number 3. And we get to a team that we actually have our choice between 2 different years. But I believe this squad that I'm going to pick here at number 3 was actually a little bit better. Imagine a little Catholic school from Washington, D.C. becoming a household name and having the coolest gear you could own on the street. You want street cred? You wore something that said Georgetown Hoyas on it back in the 80s. Because Big John Thompson found tough kids that showed no emotions and would fight you as soon as play you and play tough defense. They would beat you up physically and they dared you to fight back. And in 1985, Hoya paranoia was in full effect. Georgetown had Patrick Ewing. They had David Wingate and Reggie Williams and Michael Jackson, and they had just won the championship the previous season. No way anyone is going to hang with Georgetown in 85. So Georgetown rolled to a 35-2 record while, I might add, playing in the Big East Conference, the nastiest conference in the country at the time. But here's the problem for Georgetown. In the final, they ran into a team that just knew them so well. Because the Hoyas had already played Villanova in conference play twice. They had beaten them both times. One time by 7, one time by 2. But here's the thing. Villanova knew Georgetown. Other teams might have been afraid of Georgetown. Villanova wasn't afraid of them. But Villanova also didn't have the talent that Georgetown had. I mean, it would take a perfect game to beat Georgetown in 85, right? So Villanova went out and played about as close to a perfect game as you could. Villanova made 22 of 28 shots from the field. They shot 22 of 27 at the free throw line. It took almost a perfect game to beat the Georgetown Hoyas in 1985. And somehow, the Villanova Wildcats played one and took them out and sent them home. Next up at number 2, we go clear back to 1975. And this team coming in at number 2 was great. They had kind of a tough break, literally. And they would prove how great they were eventually. Head coach Bob Knight led the Indiana Hoosiers that had Quinn Buckner and Scott May and Kent Benson and Steve Green and Bobby Wilkerson to a 31-0 record, and they plowed through the Big Ten undefeated. But then, in the final game of the season against Purdue, Scott May broke his arm. And the Hoosiers hit the big dance, and everyone was saying, well, maybe they won't be quite as good. But then they played their first 2 games, and they beat Texas El Paso and Oregon State by a combined 35 points. Okay, well, maybe Indiana's still going to be good. But then they ran into Kentucky, and the loss of Scott May turned out to be a major problem. Kentucky shot almost 50% from the field, and Indiana got sent home early as they get knocked out by Kentucky. Now, I'll give Indiana this. They would come back the following season, and they would go 32-0 on their way to a title, and they are the last team to win it all going undefeated. That was in 76, but in 75, the Indiana Hoosiers come up a little short, and they come in today at our list at number 2. We reach our number 1 team on our list of heavy favorites that came up a little short in March Madness, and I mean, who else could it be? It is one of the biggest upsets in NCAA tournament history, but it does have some disturbing similarities to this year. In 1991, the UNLV Runnin' Rebels had won the title the year before by blowing out Duke in the championship game by 30. And now they returned pretty much everyone. Larry Johnson, Stacey Augmon, Greg Anthony, Anderson Hunt, they were all back and they were going to win it again. They blasted through the regular season. They were pounding on teams in their conference. Then they got to the tournament and they just kept beating up on people. They beat Montana by 34. They scraped by Georgetown by 8, but they beat Utah by 17. They beat Seton Hall by 12. And now UNLV found themselves facing the same Duke squad in the Final Four. Well, this would just be another 30-point blowout, right? UNLV head coach Jerry Tarkanian, he knew in 91, hey, this Duke team is different. For one, Duke has heard for the past year how you got blown out in the championship. It wasn't even close. But Duke returned everyone too. Christian Laettner, Bobby Hurley, Thomas Hill, Brian Davis. Oh, and by the way, they also had a young, really, really talented freshman by the name of Grant Hill. And Duke had gotten much, much tougher over the past year. They got UNLV into a dogfight, and late in the game, it would be the running Rebels that didn't quite know what to do in the clutch. Am I going to shoot it? Are you going to shoot it? Do we drive? Do we take the three? What do? We haven't been in this situation. Duke escapes with a 79-77 win and ended the run of the Rebels. Now, the Gonzaga Bulldogs are going to be the big favorite in the tournament this year. They will most likely be undefeated and the top overall seed. So when we look at our list today, could any of this apply to Gonzaga? I mean, could they get out coached like Houston did in 83? I doubt it. Mark Few is as good a coach as anyone in the country, so I don't see that happening. Could they face maybe a little bit tougher team like Kansas did in 97? Well, I mean, that's possible. Gonzaga's pretty tough themselves, though. Could they be a victim of a perfect game like Georgetown was in 85? Again, it's possible, but perfect games are tough to come by, too. Could Gonzaga suffer an injury that would change them drastically like Indiana did in 75? Man, I hope not. I really hope not. I hate seeing injuries. That would be absolutely terrible. But could Gonzaga be the victim of playing in a less competitive conference like UNLV did in 91 and then not quite know what to do when they get in a tight game, which, by the way, they haven't been in since like December? Yeah, I mean, Gonzaga hasn't been in a tight game recently. The Zags are going to be the team to beat, but we also know anything can happen in March Madness, and I absolutely can't wait to get to March Madness since we missed it last year. I am absolutely looking forward to the tournament this year. Hey, next week on The Dose, we have something extra special for you to get you ready for March Madness. Trust me on this, you are not going to want to miss it. It is going to be heavily March Madness flavored next week, so be sure that you stop by, be sure you're subscribed to The Dose, and be sure to let someone else know to listen as well. Hey, I say thank you all so much to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails, thank you for the texts, thank you for the tweets, thank you for subscribing to our YouTube channel, thank you for giving us positive ratings wherever it is you watch or listen, but more than anything, thank you so much for sharing the show with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Don't ever call me doll.